Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Saturday, March 30th, 2024 to everybody. Probably the last USCHoops.com college basketball podcast of March, because there's only one more day after today. Exciting podcast that we had, the emergency podcast earlier this week. This is going to be a little bit more of a full podcast, but we have a great lineup. Romer is joining us again. Very excited about that. He's got some thoughts on the Andy Enfield era and some possible replacements for Andy. And then later in the podcast, Nick and I recorded an interview with Doug Gottlieb of Fox Sports Radio and CBS, which will follow our discussion with Romer. So all that being said, Romer, how are you doing? And welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Chase. Doing well. Just looking outside the window and seeing the storm pretty much starting to fly here in supposedly sunny Southern California.
Right.
Well, but it's good to be back.
Yeah, you guys have had quite the rain. Romer is our only local host here for in the SoCal area. Nick is out in Texas. I'm here in Arizona. So it's good to have some local representation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So, Romer, I know you've been thinking of putting your thoughts together about this stuff. And Nick and I discussed some of this on the emergency pod. But, you know, before we even talk about the whole situation, why don't you just your reflections on, assuming it's over, the era of Andy Enfield at USC?
Yeah, well, I've always been a huge fan of Andy. You know, I give him a ton of credit for pretty much taking on the challenge of trying to build USC basketball back to a respectable program. Because, you know, we had the Kevin O'Neill era, we had the Jim Saya, we had Tim Floyd. And it seemed that when the job was open, nobody wanted to take on the challenge. You know, they offered Jamie Dixon not once but twice, and he turned it down despite having strong Southern California ties and his wife being an alum of the university. You know, that was no good. And it came down to Andy Enfield and Mike Hopkins. And, you know, nobody even knew about Andy Enfield up until, of course, the Sweet 16 run with Fertile Gulf Coast. And with Mike Hopkins, he was kind of a name that was out there, but he was more directly tied with possibly being the heir apparent to Jim Boeheim. You know, he kind of made a lot more sense at the time because he was a Southern California guy, went to Mater Dei. So I was kind of leaning in that way, but Andy took on the job and, you know, it kind of had a rough start based on what he had to work with. But eventually he did build the program, like I said, back to where it needed to be.
So where do you want to get into individual seasons or marks, or just more generalized? Where do you think, you know, Andy started going in the right direction? Do you think he had some peaks? Do you think he had kind of hit a ceiling with the program?
Yeah, well, there was a ton of games that I attended, and, you know, memorable games, a lot of disappointments. But my favorite game that stood out the most is the game at Galen against in 2015 against Arizona, when Elijah Stewart went off. I believe that went to like three or four overtimes, and Julian Jacobs and J-Mac both played 50 minutes that game. And, you know, I just watching back and forth, I didn't expect the team to pull that one off. But it was just one of those games where I thought, well, wow, this is a team that looks like we finally arrived. You know, knocking out a team as talented and as deep as Arizona had at that time. But then again, that season, we ended up getting swept by the Oregon schools on the road after we beat UCLA. And then we got swept by the Arizona schools on the road. And then that followed up with losing three straight to Utah, Cal, and Stanford. So it's kind of one of those things where it was always topsy-turvy. You kind of think that the program was going to finally hit its mark and turn into breaking through to the next level to where it needed to be. But it was shortcomings like that. Kind of like the Elite Eight season, right? We had Evan Mobley that year, And then we made it all the way to the Elite Eight against Gonzaga. And, we all thought we had a bad draw that season. And then UCLA, who kind of had a mediocre season, ended up getting into the Final Four, because they had an easier draw. I believe they ended up with Michigan, right? And then we ended up with Gonzaga. So go figure. And ever since then, like, Andy hasn't really been able to take advantage of that run. So, I was always publicly backing up Andy, saying that, give him more time. Nobody wanted the job. He's always been the guy. He'll figure it out. But even this past season with Isaiah Collier, we got the number one point guard, number one high school player in the country. We always were always so big on not for kind of big against Andy not getting his point guard, but for him to sign the number one overall player, being a point guard from Georgia. And then you got Boogie to come back. We're coming into the season ranked 20th or 21st. And it was just abysmal. It was an abysmal season. There was a lot of hype. We had high expectations. I believe we expected them to either win the conference or finish in the top two. But we just couldn't get it together. And it came into a realization amongst the three of us that, it's pretty much the ceiling. Andy already hit it. So we
Where
had
are
like
you?
a
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead,
Sorry.
go ahead, go ahead. No, go ahead, Jay.
Where are your now that it looks like Andy is leaving, and by the way, it's he's leaving not because he got fired. He's leaving because he did get this huge job offer at SMU. But I think the feeling amongst a lot of fans is they're like they seem to be okay with him moving on. What are your thoughts about that? Just like. There's a few holdouts, right? There's a few like diehard Andy fans, but it seems like there's maybe it's the modern era, and it's harder to find loyalty, but there's the fan base, even though Andy is objectively has had some of the best, seasons and done things that he accomplished at USC, hasn't really accomplished in basketball before. The fans are kind of like, I feel like emotionally ready to move on. What do you think about that?
I honestly think it all goes back to USC not really being a true basketball school. Like even in football, they had some holdovers with Clay Helton, go figure. Even with Sarkisian, Lane, they always wanted him to come back, and there were even some chatter in the basketball game with Tim Floyd when they wanted him to come back in some form or the other. Honestly, with the way college basketball is now. And the transfer portal, if you're not up to par with attacking and that aspect of it, you're not going to succeed. And a lot of the fans they've seen it too. They've seen how Andy is pretty hesitant on bolstering his roster or building the program with players from the portal. And we're going into the Big Ten, so expectations are at an all-time high. Based on the elite level of coaches that the program's going to go up against, and blue blood programs like Michigan State, Indiana, it's kind of like uncharted territories, and we've seen firsthand what Andy could bring to the table. So now I could personally put it out there that I'm eager to see who the next coach is that's able to help us like break through. Because it's not going to be an easy road in the Big Ten. It's only going to get more difficult. Like, yeah, we're not going to play Arizona anymore, but we're going to line up playing against Illinois, Michigan State, Indiana, Iowa. That's a tough game. We're going to get Michigan with Dusty May now. So it's time, And I think at the end of the day, Andy realized that. And if he's going to SMU, he's going to get that big payday. Good for him. Well deserved. And I don't think you could write it any better. Both parties going their separate ways, Andy's getting his payday, and then the program could go ahead and get their new coach.
Doug, on which you will hear in a second, talked about how the big part about joining the Big Ten is going to be the seriousness with which these Big Ten programs take their sports and how Iowa basketball or Wisconsin basketball. I mean, those things are like life and death for those communities. And It's something, I mean, we experience it maybe with Arizona, but in basketball, we really don't experience it with too many other programs. And, you know, you're really going to have to step it up. As Doug said, you can't just show up and say, hey, we're balling today. I mean, it's going to be a war. And our guys have got to, you know, get ready for that. And I'm not sure, you know, to borrow from The Godfather, I'm not sure that Andy was a wartime consigliere. I don't know if that's really, if Andy is the right guy to lead you into the Big Ten with that kind of just the brutal games you're going to be facing. What are you looking for, Romer? What characteristics, attributes, what would you be looking for in the new coach?
Well, I want a coach who's pretty much a grinder, a coach that pretty much takes personal accountability and a personal challenge to building his roster and knowing what's lacking and building it on into the next season. Kind of like someone who likes someone who will build a house, you know, break after break after break, layer after layer. And I just felt like Andy, he started the coast, you know, he got his payday, and credit to you. You're always posting his win-loss record since he signed the contract. It wasn't pretty. I want a coach who will take on the challenge and be able to build his team accordingly. I also want a coach who's a player's coach, will get into the weed with his players, will pretty much find players, not just in the high school level, not just in the a five-star playmout at a program who didn't get any playing time, but a coach that will take on the lower level, the mid-majors, Division II, because there's a lot of talent there. We've seen it in programs in not just in the Big West, but in the Pac-12 as well. Look what Kyle Smith has done at Washington. He's found players at Idaho State. He's found players at Division II. You know, Nico Medved has found players in JUCO over at Colorado State, Division II, and he's turned them into all-conference type of players. He's even developed them into NBA players. David Roddy, who at Colorado State, he was a quarterback in high school. He ended up becoming a first-round draft pick in the NBA. So there's talent there. And I just felt like Andy coasted in that sense. And like I said, I just want a coach who takes pride in building his roster.
Okay, you've put together a few guys you wanted to kind of do an analysis of, right? And appraise, like, why don't you let us know which ones you want to discuss, so you can kind of go one by one and give us your thoughts on these guys.
Okay, so I have three names. The first candidate is TJ Otzelberger from Iowa State. He was actually hired as an assistant at Iowa State in 2006. Under Greg McDermott, who's now the head coach at Creighton. He was promoted to associate head coach in 2010 and then hired by Lorenzo Romar in 2013 in Washington. And then he ended up back in Iowa State and hired by Steve Prohm and finally became a head coach in 2016 with South Dakota State. And here's the thing, his first two seasons there, he led them to the NCAA tournament. And one of the seasons included a 28-game win record in 2017, and he finished the season 13-1 in the Summit League. And his tenure at South Dakota State, he finished 70-33 before he ended up taking the job at UNLV. He only lasted there for about 2 years and finally came back to Iowa State as his head coach in 2021. So with TJ, what I like about him the most is he's not just known as an elite recruiter, but he's also known to be a rapid program builder. He utilizes both the transfer portal, and most of his players that come from the portal are from smaller, lesser-known programs. For example, Buffalo, UNLV, Eastern Kentucky. But in high school, he kind of made a name for himself. He's recruited some kids from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area where he's from. And one of his best traits about him, this is directly from his players, is that his players not just hold him in high regards, but he actually he's kind of like a father figure to his players. You know, he makes personal time to have lunch with them. And he also partakes in weightlifting sessions. I don't know if you've seen him in the sidelines, but
he's pretty jacked.
Jacked. Yeah, he's a jacked dude. And he's one of those guys, unlike Andy, you know, you get into it with a Tad Boyle. Tad Boyle's going to second guess himself, you know, trying to shove him around or, you know, because he's a jacked guy. So he's number one on my list. But I don't know how realistic that is because he has a lot of ties in Ames. His wife is from Ames. And he's come back in several occasions, you know. I think he might even be in – might even be his dream job, right? But then again – yeah. I think he did mention that. But I'll also point out that what's his name? The head coach, Fred Hoiberg. You know, he was a former player at Iowa State who replaced Eustachy. He ended up leaving too. So there might be a chance there, but you know, times are different now. So we'll see. But he would definitely be number one on my list.
Who else is on this list that you're evaluating?
You know, the second one, the more I read about him, the more I like him, is Mark Pope at a BYU. He played at Kentucky under Tubby Smith. And he also spent some time in the NBA as a player. You know, before he actually got into coaching, he enrolled in medical school at Columbia. And it wasn't until he was contacted by Mark Fox, who was the head coach at Georgia at the time, when he started his coaching career. He had a brief stint at Wake Forest as an assistant under Jeff Fizelik, and then eventually became an assistant at BYU with Dave Rose from 2011 to 2015. And after the 2015 season, he was hired at Utah Valley, and he spent four seasons there. And from there, he was finally back at BYU in 2019. In his first season at BYU, he ended up with a 24-8 record and 13-3 in the West Coast Conference. So with Mark Pope, he actually has a reputation of being an offensive whiz. You know, in 2019, the BYU Cougars, they finished first in three-point field goal percentage, second in assist-to-turnover ratio, third in field goal percentage, fourth in three-point field goals made per game, and fifth in the nation in assist. So it's kind of one of those, like, efficient offenses where he'll always be able to play in a faster pace and score easy baskets, make the right shot at the right time, despite having a recruiting disadvantage at BYU. You know, I do remember that there have been some games that Andy played against BYU, and we were pretty much able to beat them, right? I want to say we played them twice, and we beat them twice, right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, the more I read about Mark Pope, the more I like him. He's also another physically imposing guy. Obviously, he's 6'10", played in the NBA. My next and last candidate is actually Kevin Keats from NC State. You know, he's kind of like the Cinderella. Well, he is a Cinderella story of this year's tournament. And that's how Andy got the job at SC. And the crazy thing is he was actually on his way out, apparently. You know, he finished this season losing four straight. And then he ended up going on a run in the ACC tournament. And now he has them in the Elite Eight, a game away from the Final Four. So that's pretty crazy. You know, with Kevin Keats, he actually was the head coach at Hargrave Military Academy. He spent some time there, eight seasons from 2003 to 2011. And he coached players like Joe Alexander, Sam Young, Maurice Bates, Jordan Crawford, Mike Scott, and PJ Harrison. And he ended up with a record of 262-17. You know, after that, he ended up becoming an assistant at Louisville under Rick Pitino, and was part of the 2012 national championship team. And then he was actually eventually promoted into becoming his associate head coach in January of 2014. But a few months later, he ended up taking a head coaching job at UNC Wilmington, which he actually took over for Buzz Peterson. In his first season at UNC Wilmington, he won Coach of the Year. And it was their first championship in 9 years and first winning season in 7 years. And in three total years at UNC Wilmington, he led the Seahawks to three postseason appearances, two of them being NCAA tournaments in his last season at UNC Wilmington. And since then, the last 7 years he spent at North Carolina State as his head coach. And like I said, now he has them a game away from the Final Four. And I believe they're playing Duke, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny with Keats, he was, and, you know, as of like 2017, he was like the hottest commodity, right, in coaching because of the Hargrave connection, the Louisville connection, what he had done at UNC Wilmington. He did get off to a pretty nice start at NC State. You know, he made the tournament twice in his first 3 years. But then it's been, until this season, it's been a bit of a slog for him. You know, you think, what do you think he, how would he make that adjustment, you know, from Raleigh to Los Angeles?
I honestly think that he should be okay, but you know, it's kind of one of those things where how, if you're NC State, how can you not give this man another extension? Similar to Tinkle, right, at Oregon State when he led them to their run, he ended up getting an extension.
Well, I think he just I think he earned an automatic 2-year extension when he actually won the ACC tournament. And I'm pretty sure they're going to extend him beyond that as well. But he doesn't have to take it necessarily. You know, that's the thing. So he's really, I think, kind of like a free agent, even though he's got the 2 years. There's no, I don't think there's a there's no buyout if you were to try to hire him.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I mean, he does have a lot of resources and in the coaching background and recruiting. But, you know, if I were to rank the three, I would probably rank him third, to be honest. But out of the three, he'd probably be, like you said, the most realistic possibility.
Nick, do you have any questions you want to ask Romer?
You know, just on the Keats thing, you mentioned Wayne Tinkle, right? And they extended him, and you kind of see how that extension's gone with Oregon State, right? So I wonder if I think Keats is a lot more accomplished than Tinkle if you look at the, you know, all the winning at UNC Wilmington and some of the success at NC State. But, yeah, part of that makes me wonder there. The Mark Pope medical background, super interesting. I hadn't heard about that, but you know, you combine his Kentucky and NBA pedigree with clearly a dude who's a smart dude and runs really good sets at BYU. I'm kind of with you, Romer. You know, the more you read about Pope, you know, the more interesting he sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he grew up, I know he was born in Nebraska, but he played high school ball up in Washington, you know, where he played, where he started in college. So he does have a West Coast connection. Not that it really matters, but I don't think he's a member of LDS Church. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Because I know, you know, the thing is sometimes you these BYU coaches get the reputation of like, oh, they'd be so wildly out of place at other schools. I don't think that really applies to Pope. I mean, he's been everywhere. You know, he played at Kentucky. He was an NBA player. You know, he played minor league basketball all, you know, places. And he's coached, you know, in the South, and he's coached out West. So I don't think that like there's a regional limitation on him. And obviously, you know, Columbia University College of Physicians ain't too shabby. So for him to go there, he's obviously a pretty bright guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, then with Pope too, you know, obviously a lot of those BYU players are LDS, but you do have some non-LDS guys on that roster, like Jackson Robinson, who started at Texas A&M, played at Arkansas. He's gotten some NBA looks, still has a year of eligibility. And then Ali Khalifa is Egyptian. He's one of the more fascinating players in the country. He's a 6'11", 270-pound center who's 35th in the country in assist rate and block shots. So, you know, you do have some intriguing talents where if you were to poach Pope, presumably, you know, you'd have a lead four in the portal there to start out.
Right, right. And he also took on Sam Barcelo, who was at U of A for a while.
Oh, yeah. Alex, yeah.
Yeah, Alex Barcelo, yeah. And he ended up becoming an all-conference player under Mark Pope.
Yeah, well, and you know, we think a lot of Sean Miller, all of us too, but you look at Barcelo's numbers under Sean and then what Pope unlocked for him, like you mentioned, and he just became a dynamite shooter there at BYU the last couple of years.
And you know, here we go, Romer. I mean, this November 24th of this past year should resolve it. BYU 95, NC State 86. So there you go.
There you go.
Game was in Vegas. Jackson, that was Jackson Robinson scored 23 points in that game. I think he has a season left, right? That would be interesting. Okay. Romer, so we get you on the podcast. Any other thoughts before you sign off?
No, that's basically it. I just hope going forward they Jan Cohen does her due diligence and hires herself a coach that's all about the wits, and you know, because the challenge is there in the Big Ten. You know, you even have programs like the flagship Under Armour program, like Maryland, who just landed two big transfers. You got Rutgers, who's a cellar dweller, who landed Ace Bailey and Ron Harper Jr. So there's going to be a ton of talent, not just in the blue blood level program.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of talent, but we gotta move. We gotta get moving.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, we have a really special treat right now for our podcast listeners. My personal favorite, I think the best broadcast analyst of college basketball going, Doug Gottlieb of Fox Sports Radio and CBS. Doug, thanks so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Okay, so Doug has agreed to, we can ask him some questions about the SC job, which we all think will be open officially as of Monday. I think first, just what are your thoughts about what caliber of coach SC could target? We're obviously joining the Big Ten. There's going to be Big Ten money. Andy Enfield is getting probably about $4 million per year with the perks, not including housing. I'm guessing they could bump that up to $5, $6 million per year for a new coach with the new money from the media rights deal.
Five, $6 million a year, you can get any coach in the country, less like 10 of them.
Yeah.
But I don't, and SC, you know, because they do those interest-free loans, especially now with interest rates, like it's a great job. It should be a great job. It's not, but it should be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and for people who are listening to the pod who don't know, obviously I grew up in Southern California. You know, I forget, what are those two guys' names that were like the big SC boosters, and they used to go to all the AAU games, shit, with Rabbling and then with anybody. But like, I mean, the program has always been on that kind of cycle of build, win, and then probation, and then right. Coach fired, and then change again. Right. Now there's no probation, and you can buy players, and people are actually kind of showing up a little bit. So it's a better job on some level, but I mean, I think they just got to decide, like, do they want a glamour hire? Do they want to win? Do they want a no-nonsense guy? I also think that the reality is, could you pay $5 million for a coach? Like, yeah, or you could just pay $2.5-3 million and use that money in NIL, because you got to get dudes. And right now, where you can separate yourself at USC is in your NIL, which UCLA doesn't seem to have or hasn't. You know, it's SC, though it's more difficult to get into than when, you know, I was coming out. It was C's for degrees, right? It's really difficult school to get into, but by all accounts, not for athletes. So if you can get guys in and you have NIL, you can compete with anybody. And I don't think you need to have the biggest name coach. You have to make a decision. Do I want somebody who's connected, get players immediately, or do I want the guy who's just the best basketball coach and give him, you know, a bunch of NIL and trust that he's going to go out and get the right dudes?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Brian Dutcher on Twitter. Now, the only issue with him is I think earlier this month he signed a new extension with like a $10 million buyout. Seems like
Dutch is a pie in the sky one. Okay.
My point
is that San Diego State is, they don't have a lot of NIL. That's why they lost Keyshawn Johnson, right? The guys, Lamar Butler made a lot of NIL, but that was like the real NIL stuff, because they're real celebrities down there. My point is more like, hey, why don't you go and find the guys who have been winning?
Yeah.
Brian Dutcher, I would call Randy Bennett. Like, make Randy Bennett. And you're like, well, what Randy Bennett, you know, going to do? Like, well, he was at Pepperdine. They were winning. He's been at Washington, been at St. Louis. Like, and oh, yeah, by the way, at St. Mary's, he's the one who finally slayed the Gonzaga Dragon. So, and with very limited resources at St. Mary's, they built up an incredible program. What could he do at USC? And he's just a good basketball coach, you know? So I would take a swing at those guys, but I don't, that doesn't feel like an SC thing.
It doesn't, but you're right. They're less.
What's interesting about Enfield is he's going from SC to SMU, which is like SMU's the same thing without the success.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is the most glamorous, nicest, richest part of the state of Texas. And it's an incredible area, Highland Park, where the school is. But they bought their way in the ACC, and they think they can buy their way into relevance in college basketball. Let's see if it happens. That's a very SC thing to do.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. Let me just run a couple names by you that I have heard. The big one that's been rumored for a while is Musselman. He's a West Coast guy, you know. Kind of his reputation as a bit of a hothead. But you know, he's had results, so you can't argue with the results.
Two straight Elite Eights up until this year was a disaster. You know, must checks boxes in NBA background and knows how to get the portal and also plays a pretty fun style. Now the AD came out and said, I think it was yesterday, that, you know, he's coming back. Not that that means anything, but I don't know. That's been the rumor in college basketball, but I would think the AD wouldn't have said that.
Well, from what we've heard, that was done without the knowledge of Musselman and his staff, and Musselman has not retweeted it. Which the video is 3 years old. It's a 3-year-old video from when he signed his extension, and at the time he retweeted the video 3 years ago. He did not retweet it this time around. So you know, take that for what it is.
I mean, look, that's been the working rumor, and I think, like, dude, Muss is a lot, but in many ways, it's kind of what SC needs, sort of. Like, they kind of need, he's not a carnival barker, but he does have that in his game to, you know, get people fired up and get them going. I mean, look, it's going to be different first time he walks out there and he was at Arkansas and there's like 1,000 people.
Right. In the stands too,
right. Like, you sure you want to do this?
Sure. Nick, you got any questions?
But I think that, look, if that part, by, and just so people understand, that part of Arkansas has gobs of money, gobs of money. That's all Walmart, Tyson Chicken, JB Hunt moving. Like, those are big, big corporations with lots of money. And that's where all their execs live.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's been living in the absolute sticks, but he is a West Coast guy. Danielle has lived and worked in Los Angeles, his wife. And, you know, this is the longest he stayed anywhere in his life. I mean, look, I mean, there was a deal where, for a while he hadn't been the same place more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, and he's had a couple guys on staff for multiple years, whereas in Nevada, he kind of ran through his staff. So he's a lot. I mean, he can make coffee nervous, but, he's definitely a ball guy. He's an NBA, he has the NBA background, which I think will help him in LA. And if they have the NIL, he knows how to get players and get dudes. And I do think it's a time in which, UCLA is going to, this could be a really tough lesson for UCLA if they don't figure it out quick. Because I'm just telling you, like, the Big Ten does not have, Illinois spends a lot of money. I think other schools, Ohio State will get there as well. It'll be just like football, but the other schools in basketball, they're invested enough and they have a high recidivist rate, and it's a brutally physical league with great home courts. Like, it's going to be hard. Maryland, Illinois, Ohio State, those are big NIL programs, but it doesn't mean that the rest of them aren't any good either.
Yeah. Nick, you got any questions for Doug?
Who are their names? Other names?
Well, the other
Doug,
one.
I got one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jamie Dixon and Mark Pope, BYU. Thoughts on those guys?
Those are the names I've heard. I love Pope. Great dude. Again, NBA background. kind of feels like a weird fit there. A little bit of a weird fit coming from BYU. Plays a fun style, right? Let's guy shoots a lot of threes. But again, some of that is personnel dependent. And he's a guy who, you know, Pitino will call for because he played for Pitino. And remember, he went to Washington first before he transferred to Kentucky. But that one feels like an odd fit to come from BYU there. Jamie was, you know, last time around, seemingly every time around, Jamie's been rumored. And maybe, again, a time for a fresh start. I mean, I like Jamie, but I mean, it's fine.
It seems like the game is kind of, I mean, his he seemed to have peaked in 2011, Jamie. It just seems like that era of the Howland, Jamie Dixon style doesn't quite work anymore the same way it used to.
Yeah, and I don't know if it doesn't work or as much as maybe he's lost the energy for it a little bit for trying to win everything. But so that's an interesting one.
What about Bryce Drew?
I love Bryce. Now, Bryce's deal is, I mean, obviously, if you offer him, you know, $3-4 million, then he's going to take it, I would think. I like Bryce. He's a great dude. He does a good job of talent evaluating, talent acquisition. I think his mom has been sick, and his dad, who's a former coach, is like teaches a class at GCU, and then he has nephews that are actually on his team. Like, he's kind of got that thing that's like literally his whole family outside of Scott, who's in Waco, is in Phoenix. So that one might be a little tricky, but yeah, I mean, I think Bryce takes it.
What do you think about some of these Mountain West guys, Medved, Richard Pitino? I mean, even Alford, is that, you know, reaching too low, do you think, or are those guys legit high major candidates here in the cycle?
I mean, I guess it with Steve, I mean, he was just at UCLA, so I don't, I mean, he's not a West, I mean, he's from the Midwest, but he's been on the West Coast here or at New Mexico. If you count New Mexico as Western United States, he's been in the Western United States for 15 years now. So that would be weird, right? Hiring UCLA's former coach.
Yeah.
Steve's a really good coach. But I don't know if, I would say that Steve, I don't know. I don't know if I don't hate that. I mean, he's done a good job in Nevada. But again, like, what does USC want their best? This is a great opportunity for him, right?
Yeah.
Because UCLA is kind of flat. They're going into a new league. They kind of got it rolling a little bit with the women in terms of attendance. The men in terms of attendance have been pretty good this year. Like, but it's really a chance to, what do we want our basketball program to look like? And I don't know what they want. The other Nico's awesome, but he's a former hockey player from Minnesota. Like, just don't know if that I don't know if that works in Southern California.
What about Leon Rice? Do you have any thoughts there?
Again, like, I love Leon. Really good basketball coach, really good dude, kind of a G Shucks sort of guy. You know, a Zag guy. I mean, you can't argue with his success. I mean, none of these are bad options. These guys have all done good jobs. It's, again, what will make the donors give money?
Yeah.
And and who are they going to get, and how are they going to get them? You know, that's really what it kind of comes down to. I mean, I'm just like, what kind of program do you want? And I kind of think for USC, hold on real quick, guys, sorry.
Sure.
We got anything coming up or no? Okay. I mean, again, it's like one of those. It's interesting. I mean, I would. They didn't win it this year. I'm trying to think who else is. You know, like, Russ Turner has done an amazing job at UC Irvine. And I think if you want just, hey, we want to win, and don't have to have a glamorous coach, and you don't have to spend $5 million, that works too. Mm-hmm. But it's, how do you want to play? What do you want to look? And usually USC has almost always been, what's the brightest, shiniest object, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair? So who is that? I mean, you can't get like a Shaka would have been. I remember a long time ago there was Spring Shaka at UCLA, and though he might not have felt like it fit his personality, it was exactly what UCLA needs. I don't understand why you wouldn't think about Bruce Pearl. I mean, this is a guy that's come to multiple football schools and made it into an awesome basketball program.
Right. I don't know if he's gettable. He might not be gettable, though, if you're starting to compete with Auburn for dollars. You know, maybe he would be. I don't know. That's a good question.
I think he'd be more gettable than you think. But again, like, if they have the resources we all think that they have, you know, it's just interesting.
What do you think about, you know, if it could be done, like TJ Otzelberger?
He's not doing that. TJ was at UNLV, hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's from Wisconsin. I think Otz will be the job he'd leave for would be probably University of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. more so than SC. I just don't think he'd be a lifestyle would be a fit.
What and about look, the truth Underwood? Is
like all, a lot of these dudes, a lot of these guys don't really understand what it's like to live in LA. Like if you're making $5 million in LA and you have an interest-free loan in a house, your life's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, like Lincoln, all those guys, I know they live in, what's it called? Palos Verdes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they don't experience, they're not in downtown LA. Like they come into work and they go home to their families.
Yeah.
So it's not that dissimilar, but again, perception and reality are two very different things.
Right.
On that LA note, Doug, do you think you gave him enough NIL and back at the Brinks truck, maybe Mick would look at it?
Who?
Mick Cronin.
Mick
Cronin, yeah.
They going to buy him out? It's $16 million.
Well, if they did.
I don't think so. I think if Mick ever leaves, it'll be to go back to the Midwest where, excuse my French, people give a shit. I just like, I don't think I don't think these dudes have any idea what they're in for. Like I'm talking SC people, UCLA people. Like they, again, like, I don't know if you guys edit this, they fucking care where they're going to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything to people. Everything. And so if you go in kind of half-heartedly, like, we're just going to show up and hoop, show up and play football, like Iowa football and Iowa basketball is everything to people in Iowa, Minnesota and Wisconsin. And like, there's just an amount of kind of arrogance, like UCLA. Woo. I love Deshaun. You know, he was my high school teammate. My senior year, he was a freshman. He got called up to varsity. He's a great dude, but he knows that like it's a rude awakening they're in for. Like they all watch on TV and you're like, wow, they got big plotting white dudes. We'll go in there. We'll be fine. Like, I mean, Rutgers is loaded for war. Rutgers is, they have the two best incoming freshmen in the country on the same team. Like and Rutgers is one of the bottom programs. So, it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens with these programs. I'm trying to think who would be a guy that you could get. I mean, honestly, like Pearl to me is the easy one just because he plays a style that is really watchable because they get up and down. He's done it at football schools. And he's probably got one more good run in him in terms of turning a program, you know?
What about Tommy Lloyd? I don't think he's actually
He just signed a new contract.
The Regents have to approve it. It's not actually in effect yet. So they'd have to run and try to get in there before the Regents approve the contract. Is it worth, do you think that's what you're worth, like trying to pull the rug out from under U of A there?
I don't think he's leaving Arizona for USC. If you can get him, great. But again, Remember that's like $6 million and Tommy's done a really good job. But I don't think they're going to risk losing him and not get that thing approved.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Let's look. Again, if I was doing a search, who'd I talk to? Imagine saying, one, you got to get somebody who has the, who play, I mean, like a guy who'd be great would be Nate, who's at Alabama, but he just signed a new deal too, and that he's not getting out of that. But the way in which they play, getting up and down the court, and he's also very agent friendly, like all of those things would be really important to USC. Like you have to have, you have to have relationships with the high school people, with, you know, with all the handlers, and then with the agents as well, in order to make this thing work at the level that USC wants to make it work at.
I got one more for you, Doug. How about Sean Miller?
Again, would be great. I don't think he's, I think he just signed an extension. I think he's good with the West Coast. I think he's like, I'm good. Who else would be, I'm trying to think who else is out there. I mean, you asked about Richard Pitino. He'd be great. I think he'd actually be outstanding. And I think you could get him. Because I think, you know, Albuquerque's a great fan base, but I don't think he'd have any problem, you know, moving his family to Los Angeles. But, you know, there's always going to be people who think that's nepotism. Like, he's actually a really, really good dude and really funny. They don't play as fast as, or fast at all like his dad, but they play pretty fast, and he's done a good job of getting dudes there. It's one of the problems with like West Coast basketball is there's just not the pipeline of mid-major or low high major guys that you can pluck from, you know. Like in the West Coast Conference, if there was somebody who was really killing it, I mean, Randy Bennett obviously makes sense to me, but if it doesn't make sense to them, they think, well, he's 61-year-old white dude who, you know. But I mean, Randy, I think, is the one that you go after because he's one, he has the Australian pipeline, he has a kind of Arizona pipeline, and I don't think he'd have any problem getting players in LA, but he doesn't need like the best players to win the way he plays. But if you don't go there, like all of those other names are acceptable, but there's just not really a big name outside of Pearl that I think would generate attention and really get people, you know, in the Galen Center.
Well, except for Musselman, maybe.
Musselman.
Yeah.
Like, look, everybody I know thinks Musselman, it's Musselman's job. I just don't know if he's actually going to pull the trigger and do it.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Nick, you got any other questions before Doug hops off?
That's all I got. Thanks, Doug. Really appreciate it.
Is Bronny coming back?
No. No way. not to USC, that's for sure. I think
college basketball.
I think LeBron is dead set on playing with him next year, come hell or high water. And the thing is, I'm not sure.
It's both hell and high water.
Right. I'm not sure it's going to make a huge difference between him leaving now and leaving in 2 years, because I don't know if he's actually an NBA guy no matter what. You know, that's the thing.
It's interesting. I watched him in high school, and I thought my eval was pretty good, and still is to this day. Like, I don't know if I'm him, I have him go play for Drew Joyce at Duquesne, and you know, where he gets a lot of minutes, and then that way he can, like, he's going to go from being a bench player at SC to being like in the G League and getting the occasional call up. Like, I don't know, just go and enjoy college, man.
That's what, you know, he's the perfect kid. If his name was, you know, James Bronman, he's a perfect kid to go to college for 4 years and enjoy himself and develop over 4 years. And maybe by the end, he's like a really kick-ass player. And he plays defense, he rebounds, he can really skydive, rebound, and, you know, he starts hitting shots, and maybe he plays, you know, decent point guard. But, like, you know, that takes development over time. And that's the whole point of college. You develop over
years. It does. And, like, you also you have to get your confidence back, you know. But I mean, you know, like he's never been an alpha.
Yeah.
Even on a high school team.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's, and here's where it does suit him fairly well, is when he gets to the NBA, like, and he'll get there, right? His dad will help him get a shot. He's not going to be an alpha, right? He'll just be a guy who guards and stands in a corner and hits an occasional shot. But, like, even that takes a different mentality than the one he has. You know, it takes the mentality of somebody who can come in. And I mean, it's really hard. That's really hard to do too. Sit there for 45 minutes. They come in, You get a ball, you got to hit an NBA three, then you got to guard somebody really good. The part that people don't realize is he's little. He's not big.
Yeah.
You know, he's not even 6'2". And with barefoot. And so, you know, it's like, well, he's a point guard. Well, he's not a point guard.
Yeah.
He's an athlete. He jumps high, but he's not a great lateral athlete. And I'm not sitting here killing him. Like, I think he'd be, by the end of his career, be an all-conference level college player.
Yeah.
Like you said, natural development. But I don't know how much of the attention he got hurt them this year, but they were a mess this year.
Yeah, it was a huge mess. And look, there's all kinds of problems. I think Andy did a really nice job of stabilizing the program and bringing it to some level of prestige and, you know, winning 14, 15 conference games a season, which is something USC is not ever used to doing. But, you know, there were major holes in his recruit. Like, he did not recruit a playable big. Like, we had no one who could just catch a basketball and score around the rim. And that killed the guy like Collier, because Collier is coming in there trying to make passes at the rim, and there's nobody to catch it, nobody to finish.
Yeah, didn't have a rim roller guy. Yeah, those are hard to get. I would also tell you that Collier didn't play any defense and couldn't shoot. That's also part of the issue there, right?
Certainly part of the issue. Although his defense actually, when he got back from injury, he played a little bit of defense finally.
Well, because I think he got the message when people said, like, you know, the scouts watch every game, right? Like, you know, they watch that, right?
Yeah.
So when you just go into pout mode because you're not making shots, like, they watch that. So I think that message was received. But yeah, it was not a great team. And I would tell you that the big guys on that team felt like it didn't matter who they played. They weren't getting the ball anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a little bit of that, but it was a mess. It was a mess. And I'm sure Andy needed a fresh start and SC needs a fresh start. And this is a great chance at a fresh start.
Yeah.
I
totally agree.
But they have some of the things, some of the check marks that you need to be resources, right? Location, facility's good enough, nothing special about it, but, you know, good enough. And like, your arch rival's kind of struggling right now. There's no reason that they can't go stick a flag in the ground and build something really cool.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, the other thing about Mick is Mick's in this weird spot where I don't think LA is dead to him, but it's not like people in LA are like, send your kid to play for Mick. And they struggle to take transfers with all the other stuff they got going on over there. It's a great opportunity for USC to build this thing into something cool. I just don't know if they're going to do the SC thing and hire some NBA guy to come in.
I'm not, that's not what I'm hearing from, you know, hopefully Jen Cohen does not fall for that kind of thing.
No. But Jen,
if Lynn Swann was still the athletic director, we probably wouldn't end up with someone like, you know, Mike Brown or something like that. But with Jen Cohen there, I think she's smart enough not to fall for that nonsense.
Yeah, it'd be interesting though. But remember, the one major coaching basketball hire she did was Mike Hopkins.
Yeah,
had early success and then didn't pan out.
Yeah.
So I think she gets it. I'll just be interested. Like, again, like, there's really good coaches. It's not that hard, mm-hmm. and all those names you presented are good. But it's what do you want? You know, sustainable, solid. I don't need to even worry about it. That's Russ, Randy Bennett. You know, I like those San Diego State guys. There's nobody else really in the WCC or the Big West that you definitely, you'd say, kind of fits that. I mean, Pasternak has done a great job of, he's basically been the muscleman of that league. They just haven't been able to figure it out, get to the tournament. Right. They were kind of a mess.
Right, yeah.
Muss is a guy, I know that it's all about the boosters and getting dudes. And the Muss thing would be great. But it is a lot. There's a different energy to the program. And it's going to depend on what she wants that program to look like. I think Muss has the highest ceiling.
Yeah.
I think Randy Bennett and those type of guys has the higher floor.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you need to look at.
Yeah. I do think Muss would be able to bring engagement with boosters in a way that maybe other coaches wouldn't. And that's certainly something missing with Andy, because that's not Andy. Andy was really, he's not the guy to get out in front of the boosters and go raise a bunch of money, unfortunately. Yeah. Nice guy, but that's not his thing.
Yeah. And look, Muss has done it also with a school where, you know, hey, you can raise all your money. This is where I like Bruce Ford as well.
Yeah.
Like, is you can raise all your money all you want. But remember, first dibs go to football.
Right.
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 So, and that's, and but it sounds like all of us should be like, yeah, it totally makes sense. That sounds good. But these guys, you know, dudes have egos. So, you know, you have to have some, Jen has to know what she's getting into. And she's been around this thing long enough. I've been told that she's got a pretty good handle on what she, you know, on what she really wants.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate it, Doug. Thank you so much for hopping on with us. And maybe some other time we'll get you back on to get your thoughts about other stuff.
Well, when they decide, let's do it again. We can figure out what their team's going to look like.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks again.
Awesome.
See you guys. Thanks, Doug.